CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. Yes, it is Thursday morning, which means it's one day closer to the weekend. If that's what you've been waiting for, if that's what you need, if that's your solace, that's the reason that you work hard every day so you can get to the weekend and spend some time doing the things you want to do. Well, you're in luck because it is Thursday. And being a Puzza Thursday, I've also got lots of stuff on the lineup for you this morning. We've got a great burning platform heading your way later on. I can say it's great ahead of time because I know there's going to be argument. There's going to be big topics discussed. We're going to talk a little bit about where the world is headed. Pumi says the world's actually on fire this morning. And she is, of course, here this Thursday morning, as she is every Thursday morning. Pumi Mashiko, it's good to see you, Pums. And she's sporting...
Have you not seen the pictures out of London?
No, I know. So Pumi's actually sporting her Naomi Campbell hairstyle this morning to celebrate the fact that there are heat waves going on in Europe. Everyone's hot, 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 like Naomi used to be in the 90s. So how are you, Pums? What's happening?
Everything's happening. It's Thursday morning. You know what the greatest thing about today is?
Yeah.
As y'all can see, I'm back in my own environment.
The office, yeah.
Do you see this little thing in my hand here?
Coffee cup.
I'm just saying.
What is it?
Today.
Do you have decent
today
coffee?
Because the load shedding schedule is something I can handle now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm here with my own coffee.
It's the little
my
things.
My own cup of cha. The little things. Really.
And you could turn on your kettle and you could actually switch on the coffee machine and all those things that usually... Well, I mean, so yesterday the power went off here and the day before it, I think 8 o'clock at night. So luckily I'd already cooked and eaten and got all that shit out of the way. But I was like, what the hell is this? Because for 2-3 days we didn't have load shedding. And I was like, ah, this is better. And it's amazing how quickly you get used to that again. It's terrible, right?
That 8 o'clock load shedding, right? That Jista says rolling blackouts, and I agree. That 8 o'clock schedule, right? Mm-hmm. It's a little bit too early to go to bed, but it's also just you're not waiting till 10:30 for when it comes back to whatever. So usually I just go to bed and then wake up at 2 a.m. and take it from there.
Yeah, well. A lot of people up this morning with lots to do, up and at them. Emmanuel wants to know, Emmanuel, you're not paying attention at all, hey? Is Bulelo coming back? Bulelo's overseas at the moment, and he's not coming back. I mean, we told you that, because when he went off to America, he came back here. He was going to set up a whole bunch of things, and he got distracted and started doing some different stuff, and he didn't come back to us. But he does listen to the show, and he sends me messages from time to time. And he'll join us when he's got something to say. So we'll get him back. But I mean, you know, you got to move on. It's like people who still ask me, like, when's my Mabale coming back? Or
Bulelo is a vagabond. He's out there.
Right. Or when are you going back on radio? I mean, someone said to me the other day in the shop, like, I remember you from radio. And I mean, it didn't really sound like that, but it's funnier if I say that. I'm like, oh, thank you very much. So she goes, when are you going to go back on radio and on FM? It's much easier to listen to you on FM. I thought, there's nothing I can do about that. It's just, I, you know, 5 years ago, I still explained to people, I'm like, well, let me show you on your phone. Now I just go, nice to see you.
It's not, radio's.
Meet me halfway, you know? That's all I'm asking.
We've all moved on. But he wants to know. I was wondering this. Is Bakabantu like from Oudtshoorn? Where is he from?
Yeah, he's from Craddock. And I think his family live in Craddock, but his mum works in Grahamstown, Makado. So that's where he is.
Makanda.
That's where he is at the moment. So.
Ah.
And he's got terrible load shedding there, and you know, he can only join us some mornings, and then his sound is bad, so he has to switch off the camera. It's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare.
So when I saw that story that I sent to Dory about the guy from Oudtshoorn.
Yeah.
Did you see that? The guy from Oudtshoorn who told everybody in his committee that he's going to a pageant –
Yes.
In Pretoria.
Right.
And everybody like collected money for him and gave him the money for his pageant, whatever. And then he never did go to the pageant. Like, I don't know what he did with the money. But then it didn't stop there. His lies snowballed.
I love this.
Because this is what lies do. This is what lies do. They catch up with you.
Right.
You know, and, just, and his lies snowballed and snowballed. And he had to make himself a little sash. So they told
so you can
people,
imagine how shit that
And they
that
told
looked.
People that he actually went all the way to Pretoria.
Yeah.
And he actually placed. It was a pageant that he was Mr. something. Mr.
Yeah, so he,
Unity.
He just wanted a free trip to Pretoria, right? And he got people to
I
pay.
Don't even think he went I to mean, Pretoria.
So what's the difference between raising money for a stupid pageant or starting a GoFundMe so you can go to Pretoria for a visit?
Well, you know, going to Pretoria, telling people you're going to Pretoria for a visit and kind of pretending there's a noble cause to which you are going for which you are going to Pretoria.
Right.
It's different. And now
shame.
He's been caught out in his lie. Poor boy.
Shame.
He's been caught out in his lie.
But he made the best part of this is that he made a fake crown and a fake sash.
I love it.
Like that's what he so he wanted to prove to them that he hadn't abused their money. Do you even know how much money it was?
I don't know.
So he basically made this really crappy like sash that he'd written, you know, Mr. whatever
Mr.
on.
Mr. Unity. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And got himself a little, I don't think he got a crown, but he got the sash. Because I don't think like, you see, and funny. Here's the thing. This is also the thing where you know that his lie kind of just was snowballing out of control. It's probably people like, hey, how was that trip to Pretoria? So how did the, he has no pictures from the pageant. Also, you know when it's those men's like Mr. South Africa or all that stuff, they actually don't make sashes. They actually don't make sashes. They make this like scarf type thing that goes on.
Oh.
The sashes for the girls.
You have like, to forgive la, me. La, la. Like I don't watch pageants because I'm stupid as hell. So I don't really know what's going on there. I wouldn't know if Mr. South Africa arrived on the show this morning. I'd be like, who the hell are you? I have no idea.
I don't know. I don't know what men's pageants are like,
no.
But women's pageants are a spectacular thing to watch. There's like a bevy of beauties strutting.
So part of this, Pumi, is like Oudtshoorn, right? Like in Oudtshoorn, being in a pageant is still a big thing. I mean, you know, in small town South Africa, and I think this is maybe a hangover from the apartheid era or something. But there's something about those pageants in those little towns that people just love. Like I met someone from, not Oudtshoorn, Upington. And she's a good looking girl and everything else, but she won a Miss something or another. In that town, she became a celebrity. Overnight.
As one should.
Yeah. Well, this
as
is.
As one should.
Well, if you say
become
so.
Become a celebrity yeah. when you like yeah, out there representing.
Yeah.
So the pageant lifestyle. Did you see the thing with Lalela Mswani last week?
No.
Was it last week? So she and I have no idea what this is, right? Miss Supranatural.
What is
something
that?
Of that nature. I don't know. Gareth, just go with it. Oh you know, it's out there and she won.
There's a new Miss Something every bloody time.
She won.
Yeah.
And she won, and after all the hate that she got from all sorts of people when she went to the Miss World that was in Israel, Minister Natim Tetwa was forced to send her congratulations on Twitter.
Oh, really? Just because she won
yeah,
this?
Yeah, because what else does he do if it's not sending congratulations
right.
or
I mean, what is,
condolences?
What has Natim Tetwa done in the entire span of his ministry? Hmm. Well,
he sends condolences and congratulations.
Yeah. Right. He's Minister of Funerals.
Yes, he sends those.
Yeah.
All the time. So he sent one to her. After he was so horrendously awful to her and kind of withdrawing.
Do you remember?
Withdrawing
because,
South Africa's support.
That's right. Because she went to Israel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
But what support?
Yeah. No, no. Suddenly he wants to climb on the bandwagon. Listen, these guys are... I reckon being in politics at the moment is a really bad idea because they're just on a highway to hell. They really are. Nobody in the world is looking at politicians. Because you see, I thought at the beginning of COVID, and I promise I won't go on about this for a long time because I think people are sick. I thought at the beginning of COVID, I thought, oh no, this is really shit because slowly over the 10 to 15 years before that, we had started moving away from a dependency worldwide on government for everything. People had stopped looking to government to answer questions. They'd stopped trusting the experts because slowly but surely people in the world were becoming more and more emancipated. They were talking to each other on social media. They were starting to make their own decisions outside of the state. You know, we weren't entirely caught up in governments and, you know, those political discussions around who's in charge. And it was a good thing. And I was thrilled. And I was like, this is the future is bright. We're going to have a disintermediated future where increasingly people won't have to listen to stupid politicians. And then COVID hit, and it was clear that people, again, because they were afraid, were going to call on government to step into the breach. And governments all over the world did, right? They made outrageous and stupid rules. They locked down. They did all kinds of things that are now, with the benefit of hindsight, demonstrably stupid and very, very deleterious to the whole cause of freedom. And what happened then after that is that, and this is where I was pleased, because at that point I'd given up. I was like, oh no, we're back in the hands of the politicians. We're back in the hands of government. And then after that, something really interesting has happened, is they've managed to screw up their credibility and their approval even more post-COVID. Because COVID gave them a bump, and everyone was like, pray for Cyril. Do you remember all that shit? And then suddenly...
Really?
Yeah, you remember.
Were people praying for Cyril?
You remember at the beginning of lockdown, there were
pray
all
for
those.
Cyril.
Oh yeah, no. there were all those assholes who were saying, "We must stand by the president.
Pray for Cyril.
He's trying to save our lives. We need a good government who can look after us as the citizens of South Africa. Lockdowns are great." Do you remember those people? Anyway, they very quickly. Well, no, it took them a long time. Some of us were smart enough to figure it out quickly. It took those guys such a long time, but they eventually figured out. Actually. These people are not your friends. They are not even helpful. They're not even useful. Do without them and you will do much, much better. So government approval went somewhere from 30% and declining to suddenly going up again during COVID to maybe 40. And now they've dropped right down at like 20 all over the world. And you can see it in you know any research that you bother to look at in terms of population surveys where they actually ask people about their faith in government, faith in media, faith in institutions, and faith in the experts. It's all gone through the floor, which is terrific. I think it's great. Because who needs these people? You know, can you believe that? I mean, Pums, if they'd got it right, if like all of these experts had promised us they'd take care of inflation, and I'm talking about Biden, I'm talking about, you know, the Janet Yellen, who admitted the other day she has no idea what she's doing. And she was in charge of wasn't she in charge of the World Bank or the IMF for a while? Janet Yellen? She was.
Don't get me started with IMF. Don't get me started with the IMF. But, you know, you're reminding me of something that pray for Cyril. I don't know. I missed that. I missed it completely. But do you remember there was a time? Do you remember there was a time when we used to have lots of, like, pray for South Africa stuff days?
Yeah,
you know?
I remember.
Then there was that... And there was that song, that South Africa, we love you. Do you remember that song?
Vaguely.
Peace in our land.
I try to forget things that are so stupid.
That everybody was in. Like, everybody was part of singing that song. It was like one of those We Are the World type songs.
Oh, God, no. Oh, I don't remember
for South Africa. Chikotwala was the main.
It's ringing a very distant, very fading bell. I mean, I honestly don't. I would choose not to remember that if I could. But there's something.
Do you think if we wrote a song like that, because you're quite good at writing like these lyrics of things?
Lyrics,
like that.
But I couldn't write
a
song.
Do you think we could sell it to Natim Tetwa?
Oh, for sure.
Do you think we could get him to buy it for like 5 million?
Of course, piece of
cake.
It
doesn't have to be like 20 million, like the flag.
But How would you sleep? How would you sleep at night knowing that you'd taken 5 million rand in taxpayers' money because a dumbass Minister of Arts and Culture is giving it to you?
We could do something with that.
Yeah.
And then we can get him to come, you know, like in Kubeha, where the gift of the givers were unveiling this borehole at the hospital that they from money that they like collected and donated.
Yes.
And then the minister, I think he's the Minister of Sanitation or whatever, and shows up at the, like, here's a borehole donated, paid for.
He just pitches up.
Buying donations. And put in place by an NGO something that, if he was doing his job, wouldn't be necessary.
But he
just shows up for the ribbon cutting.
So he had the temerity to just pitch up for the ribbon cutting as if it was his work.
Imagine the goal.
Wow. I do not understand how people can do that with, you know, you have to have a hide like a rhino to think that that's okay. Unbelievable. All right, so listen, I've got a few things I wanted to talk to you about this morning. And before we get to the burning platform, because there's so much on my mind. All right, so first of all, I saw this horrible story in the news on Tuesday about how they are really concerned because there's been a further drop in the kids who are taking maths and science at school. In fact, in the Western Cape, there are a bunch of schools now that have announced they're not even going to offer maths and science for grade 10 to matric because people are just not interested in taking the subjects. They've heard it's difficult, so they choose not to do them, and then they do other subjects instead. I mean, this is really, really scary because I thought maths and science were compulsory up to a certain age. What's the story there?
You know, so maths and what do they call it now? Life science. I think they call, no, life science is like biology.
Yeah.
But there is a, you know, anyway, up until grade 7, these have a level of being compulsory. And then grade 8 and 9 as well. But in grade 10, remember, like we had to, we could choose in grade 10, you get to grade 10 and you decide what you want to do. But I don't remember being allowed to drop maths.
No.
And it's a bad idea.
I remember my parents wouldn't let me drop maths because I was shitty at maths for the first year and a half, 2 years of high school. I'd totally given up. And my averages were somewhere around 55, 56%. And it carried on like that. But my parents would not let me drop to, because you remember in our day we had standard grade and then higher grade. And I wanted to drop my maths down to standard grade because it would be much easier. You know, it's kind of like what they do with maths lit now as opposed to maths.
There is still standard grade.
Is there?
Maths lit is something completely different.
Okay.
Maths lit is,
My mother and father said to me, if you drop down to standard grade, you can forget about it. You can go and live in the garden. You can build a shelter for yourself. And you are not going to come into the house, and we're not going to feed you. You want to do standard grade maths? Go and get a job right now.
I did standard grade maths. I did do standard grade maths.
Well, they wouldn't let me do it. So eventually, I pushed through, Pumi, and eventually, someone took the trouble of explaining this stuff to me, like in my second last year of school, and I suddenly it all clicked.
Right.
If you get a good teacher, makes a difference.
So that's the. That right there, that's the magic, right? So the magic is you have to find, we need more maths and science teachers who like maths and science and who know how to do. I went to a graduation celebration on Monday evening for a guy whose doctorate is in psychology with a maths major.
Oh, yeah.
And his whole thing is about how to teach maths in senior secondary school for understanding, you know, so how to make maths and it's about reasoning, mathematical reasoning.
Right.
For high school learners. I was like, damn, the guy's got a doctorate. It's like, anyway, but this guy's passion for maths,
I
and he's
that.
Currently leading a project that, funny enough, Muzi set the task for them, set the challenge for them to say, yeah. So they are writing a maths textbook in Setswana, which is going to be one of the first in South Africa. Setswana high school textbook in maths. Because then, you know, we often talk about this here, about understanding anything is really about hearing it in your language.
Absolutely.
In your language. Yeah. If you had around the teacher that explained to you how maths works, you were lost and you hated it, and that's the problem that a lot of kids have, which is why a lot of them drop out of it, is they have a language barrier. So they have a problem understanding the concepts as well as the language, because the way that the concepts are described is in a language that they cannot understand.
That's absolutely
so Afrikaans kids learn maths in Afrikaans.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't have to worry about the language. They just have to worry about the concept.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Also, I mean, Cadbury's are doing this really interesting campaign at the moment. They're trying to promote literacy. So they are helping people who don't read and who haven't got books to hear stories. Read them in this case. But I mean, I was saying the other day, one of the reasons that podcasting is so valuable and why it'll become increasingly valuable as time goes by is that a lot of the humanities subjects, not the practical ones like science and engineering and, you know, those kinds, they can be done in podcasts. You don't need to go to an expensive university to learn, you know, English literature or Setswana literature or anything else. You can do that stuff by listening. And listening is the oldest form of learning. We tend to use the book as a symbol of learning, but the book is a novel concept. I mean, most people, even in Europe, the when Gutenberg bring out his printing press, the 1400s, and before that, it was only monks who could write in Latin on manuscripts. You know, the writing and reading was a very, very select preserve, and most people learned by listening.
So think about it, right? Babies and children are natural learners.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do all the time.
Yeah.
And you can hear and speak before you can read or write. And so for the first
100%.
4 years of your life,
yeah,
all the learning you have is based on hearing and experiencing.
Correct. Well, that's why I said to the agency who are doing this thing with Cadbury, I'm like, well, start off by letting people hear it, because hearing it will help them to eventually read it. And Greg was saying to me, and you know, Greg has got two young kids, Greg who works at Cliff Central. He was saying to me, his kid, his eldest, can already read, and he hasn't learned by the alphabet. He's learned by sounds. And now he's retrofitting the spelling afterwards, and it makes more sense. And they're apparently that's the way they're teaching kids now, is they don't teach them, you know, here's the word, that's the letter, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Instead, they say, k-a-t-a, here's a k, that's an a, that's a t. And then the kids figure it out a lot quicker. Makes sense, right?
Yeah, it makes sense.
It really
but
does.
But English is so complicated.
Yeah.
Sometimes that C is a k, and sometimes that C is a...
Did you hear the story? There are a lot of people in the comments talking about the story about a South African woman who died in a flat in London, apparently.
In London.
Listen to this. So a South African woman was found 2.5 years after she died in her London flat. I read the story yesterday. Man, it was heartbreaking. Ugh. So listen, it carries on.
It's crazy.
This is unbelievable. So here's the story. Apparently, her neighbors complained about the strong stench coming from her flat, but it took the police and the flat managing trust 2.5 years to respond to the complaints. Oh. That is disgusting.
I have so many questions.
maggots.
So who paid
coming out of her flat
for 2.5 years.
Well, that's one of the questions. But maggots were coming out of her flat. Her mail was piling up, but nobody for 2.5 years thought to go and check. She was estranged from her brother, and he's the only family that she had in London. Holy shit! See, how insane is that? What a story!
There are so many things. Like, there's so many things about the story for me. So many things about the story. Like, did she not work? Did she not have a job where somebody went, hey, where's Pumi? You know?
I think she was old.
She not have...
She's probably elderly.
So what about her rent?
Maybe she owned the apartment.
There's still, like, services to be paid for.
Well, you know what? They, sometimes a bureaucracy takes a long time. We're not the only country whose government is dysfunctional. Let's not forget that.
Oh, my God. Andrew says the neighbor downstairs heard footsteps from her flat about a year ago.
Oh, my God. Okay, so, I mean, can you imagine walking in on that, though? What you find if you go into a flat where someone has been dead for 2.5 years, what does it even look like? What does the corpse look like? Is it all like hollowed out and just bones and like dry skin? Like what kind of a...
It's not bones. It's not bones.
What is it? Like biltong.
I'm just Googling how long does it take for a corpse to completely decompose.
Oh my God, this is an important one to Google. I looked up something this morning when I woke up. Do you remember when people used to sign letters on behalf of someone else? They'd put PP before their signature. Do you know what that stands for?
No.
Per procuratonem.
Oh.
It's Latin for.
Okay.
So a procurator is like it's like an agent. So it's a shorthand for proxy. Per procurationem. So now you know. PP.
Okay.
If you sign on behalf of someone.
Here's the skeletization,
oh
right?
Oh, my God. All right. Here we go.
Stages of human decomposition. So this one says it usually requires 3 weeks to several years for a body to completely decompose into a skeleton, depending on factors such as temperature, humidity, presence of insects, and submergence in substrate, in a substrate such as water.
Oh, right? My God.
So this one... This one is like stages of human decomposition.
Feeling sick.
Self-digestion begins immediately
after. Oh, my God.
Rigor mortis causes muscles stiffening. Stage two, bloating. Leaked enzymes from the first stage begin producing gases. And due to the gases, the human body can double in size, giving it a bloated look.
Disgusting. Good Lord. This is so gross. So how long?
So 1 month the body starts to liquefy, it says. Oof. Ew.
So,
it takes several years.
Okay,
so
but
I don't
this is
think
much later.
Would've...
Like 2.5 years, she must have been pretty dry by then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she would have wizened and dried out and, you know, become like parchment. I think that's what she would look like.
I wonder how long the smell lasted. Because, you know, like smell, a sense of smell is an accommodating sense, right? So if you walk into a room with a funny smell after a couple of minutes, you don't smell it anymore.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean the smell is gone.
That's true.
It just means that your body has, you know, your brain has compensated for
right.
it. So I wonder how long it was smelling. Like, what were the neighbors smelling for? For how long were they smelling this thing?
It's just so revolting. And the whole thing is just, it's just so gross. I don't want to think about it too much, but imagine 2.5 years and nobody noticed. I mean, that is really, you know, when people are crying out for help and they go, oh, no one would notice if I went away. Well, 2.5 years, no one noticed this woman went away. You have nothing on her.
So, you see, Bronwyn now says fear of living on our own. And I agreed, you know, and I remember when I just first got divorced and Kanego and I were living on our own. it was one of the things that I worried about. It's kind of like, if something happened to me and Kanego was too small to phone anyone or tell anyone or whatever. So then I created a connection, right? So people that you call every day just to check in, so that people know if I haven't heard from this person.
Why do you think I do this show?
Makes sense.
Why do you think I do the show? I do the show every morning because then you know I haven't died in the night. Oh, I do hate these stories though, because listen, I mean, I'm joking when I say that, you know, I do the show because you'll know I'm not dead. I mean, luckily, I've got people in my life, but it is something to think about. And I think for a lot of people, it's a very serious concern, especially as they get older. They're like, well, if you haven't heard from anybody, if nobody has phoned you or messaged you or spoken to you in 2 days, 3 days, when do you start thinking, oh my God, nobody cares? That's a scary thought. You want to feel uncomfortable? Just imagine yourself not hearing from another human being, and not because your signal doesn't work or because load shedding is not enabled you to charge your phone, or because nobody cares. For 2-3 days, how many days would it take until you would get very, very seriously concerned, until you'd start becoming depressed about the fact that you're alone? How long would it take?
It's very hectic.
Yeah. I wonder what it is. I mean, the funny story, CZ says, this is a story of why old school black parents didn't let their kids go overseas. What if you die? We won't be able to find you. Right. Oh. Theron says the smell would have been worse now because of the Amber Alert in London. Well, what is going on there? Because if I have to hear one more person on social media from Britain complain about the heat, I don't know. I mean, so 40 degrees. Look, that is hot. I'll give you that. That's very warm. Yeah. Even in Johannesburg, Gary, we would complain about it. In London, they're not prepared for that because that's not...
What are you talking about? We complain when it's 28 degrees. Here in Joburg, if it's like 28, if it's 32 degrees.
For me, I don't. I like the heat. Why do you think... I come from a long line of ancestors who saw that place was nowhere. That was not a place to stay. I mean, they couldn't have predicted global warming, right? But they were like, let's get the hell out of here. Let's get to South Africa. For 6 generations or more, I've had ancestors living in Africa and in the African sun. We like it hot. We don't like it cold. I don't want to be in the cold northern hemisphere during winter. So I come here, I struggle through 3 months of winter, and I can already feel, and I know I don't want to like jinx it, but man, I can feel it already. I took the puppy outside this morning so she could go and do her business. And I stood outside in the cold with just this top, this sort of short, you know, I've got a t-shirt under this and just this thing. And I went outside and it wasn't so bad. I was like, yes, I can feel it. It's coming back. That's what I love.
Listen, when I woke up the other day and I could see the sunlight coming through, I sort of see it behind me here, the lights beginning to come. That's how I know, like, summer's coming back. It's like the lights coming out earlier and earlier. It's wonderful. But look what's happening in London. And it's not just London. So it's Europe as a whole. And it's also kind of India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, they've all been in these crazy heat waves. And this heat wave, like, they're not geared for it.
That's the point, right? Like, we are not geared for snow in Johannesburg. So that's why when it's really, really cold here in winter, and people have been saying this hasn't been that, it's been quite mild this winter. But we're not geared for that. We don't have the insulation on our windows. We don't have the, you know, the stuff in the roof. We don't have the stuff under the floors. We don't have like these precautions that they have. And it's amazing to me, like, why does London not have more air conditioning? Because air conditioning is also the best way to warm a room. It's also the cheapest.
I don't know.
Why don't they just put in more aircon?
Because I think they have lots of gas. I think one of their heating systems is gas.
Well, not so much anymore. Not since Russia shut down that pipeline for maintenance. Right? Not so Listen. Much.
The world, Gareth, the world, everything's, the world's turned upside down. That's what it is.
Well, they're completely unprepared for this heat, and it's driving them all crazy. It's all they can talk about. So, there we go. Michael says, those poor bastards this side are melting. Ha, ha, ha. I tell them it's lekker, man. It's like the holidays in South Africa. Yeah, you know.
Can you imagine being in the underground in this heat?
Oh, wow. And again, they don't really have good ventilation down there. And if you've been in London's underground, is much older than anywhere else. So, sometimes you have tunnels on top of tunnels on top of tunnels, and very little in terms of air connections between them. So when you go downstairs, then you go down another set of stairs, then you go down another set of stairs, you eventually go, oh my God, I'm like in the bowels of the earth here. And it starts getting really, really warm. And I'm not talking
and
about...
And the engines are all going for all those engines. And all. It's,
correct.
It's a mess, y'all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is also... these Europeans must shut up, says Sanele. They love going to Dubai where it's 120 degrees so much, but they can't stand their own heat. Let them fry. Snai says, I must say it's impressive how they've responded to the heat and are protecting their infrastructure. Our government would be waiting for the damage to happen. Yeah, well, that's also true. Anyway, we got lots of things to get to this morning. I've got a few headlines for you. Do you want to hear some of those?
Let's hear the headlines.
All right. So first of all, Netflix has lost almost 1 million subscribers. This is really, really bad for business. We spoke about this briefly the other day. But after enjoying a long reign as the king of streaming, Netflix faces a tough fight to keep its crown. Almost 1 million subscribers have been lost between April and July as more people decided to quit the service. Why do you think that is?
I really don't know. I really don't know, other than to say maybe the content hasn't kind of been as great as it could be.
Yeah.
And also now that, so if you think about the fact that when Netflix started, they really evolved from being a video rental service. And so that meant that they needed other people's content, which is why they kind of did a pivot and started making their own content. Mm. But now that everybody has gone into the streaming service, like Disney's content isn't available to them. Amazon Prime's got their own content, their own streaming service. Apple has its own content and its own streaming service. So right. the competition is too much, and they're just not geared for that.
Well, Reed Hastings was asked, why has everything slowed and why has the exodus slowed? So what has the reason been that people have left in less numbers than they were in April? And apparently he says Stranger Things has something to do with that. The new season of the hit drama has had a phenomenal success rate and may have helped stem the exodus of Netflix customers. The company reported its first subscriber loss since 2011 in April, news that was followed by hundreds of job cuts and a sharp drop in the share price. Rivals are challenging its dominance with price hikes that have also taken a toll. Subscriber losses reported on Tuesday were the biggest in the firm's history, with the U.S. and Canada seeing the highest number of cancellations in the past 3 months, followed by Europe. So apparently, executive director at Ampere Analysis, a guy called Guy Bisson, said it was inevitable that Netflix would start to see its grip on the market loosen. When you're the leader, he said, there's only one direction to go, especially when a large number of competition entries come into the market, which is why Netflix has seen some loss over the last few years. It's a stark change for them. They enjoyed a seemingly unstoppable growth as they revolutionized the way people around the world consumed entertainment. So,
And I think that affordability is also a thing, right?
Right.
Well, we are not the only ones in South Africa seeing like inflation and the tightening of belts.
Right.
So that also has a thing to do with it, is if people have to make some sacrifices, those are some of the places where they will sacrifice.
Well, if you look at a graph of Netflix's growth between 2015 and 2022, they've actually provided us with quite an interesting look at what the major contributors to their success have been. And this is actually from Netflix, so I'm going to put this little graph up here so you can see what I'm talking about. But it's quite cool because it shows you which shows have promoted their biggest growth or have kept them in an acceleration curve rather than deceleration curve. So if you look at this, the first show to really garner them a massive audience was The Crown Season 1. It took a big leap up there. Then with Stranger Things Season 3, it went up again. There's a little bump. Squid Games was good for them. And then Stranger Things Season 4 seems to have done something good right at the end here. But you can see the total number of viewers and subscribers leveling off.
It's plateauing.
Right.
But they've got a whole bunch of, like, African content, particularly South African content coming up. They've got their first Afrikaans show mm-hmm. coming out in August, I think. And it's got, what's that guy from The Mummy? What Vosloo?
Arnold Vosloo, yeah.
Arnold Vosloo. It's got that guy.
Okay.
They've got a whole lot of content, local content coming out now, end of July. And so, they're trying. The thing, though, about creating content, and this is what the studios have known for a very, very long time, is it's a hell of an expensive game.
Very.
You have to, just if you watch that Stranger Things, if you watch that Stranger Things 4, and look at how much money has been spent in putting that thing together, it's like...
Yeah, it's crazy.
You have to spend a lot of money.
In other news, because Netflix isn't the only thing going on, resignations, dismissals, and suspensions as Prasa has nabbed staff linked to dodgy contracts. I don't know if you've heard about this story, but it seems to be an ongoing saga. Prasa, which has been pretty much a mess from day one, and I don't think it's unkind to say that, being reported on News 24 this morning that they are having massive resignations, people are being dismissed. There are suspensions taking place, and Prasa staff are extremely nervous because all of this is falling apart around them. Dodgy contracts, which were signed illegally by various CEOs over the last couple of years, all leading to a lot of instability at Prasa. That's the Passenger Rail Association of South Africa. So I don't know what's going on there, but we'll figure it out as the chips fall. Cyril Ramaphosa... Speaking of people who are dealing with mass problems, he says black industrialists need reliable power to grow. Well, Cyril, actually everybody does. But if you're trying to schmooze black industrialists, the main thing you might want to do is scrap BEE, which benefits only ANC cadres and your friends. How about that? You want to help black industrialists? How about you start off by not making it just ANC-linked industrialists who schmooze and kiss ass with the ANC. That would be nice. How about that? We admit that's a problem. But you can see, it's like, for example, when he went to poor people the other day, and he's like, well, you know, I understand your pain. We understand how expensive it is for you to catch taxis, and we know how terrible your lives are. And only because he's got no other instrument to play at the moment except this. So now he's talking to what he believes are his core constituencies and trying to promise them things and trying to sympathize with them. I don't even think he can promise them things because they know he won't.
I don't think those are his core constituencies, though.
You don't
think those are not even his, no, those are not his core constituencies.
Well, he's trying to win over black industrialists.
Making noises.
Yeah.
Making noises. You know, he still takes his walks.
Oh, really?
In the mornings. And he doesn't live far from where our office is. And the other day, on a Saturday morning, when I was coming into the office, I saw him walking up the road here, up to it, towards kind of that main Rosebank Center.
Yes.
And there was a walking with his bodyguards. And there was a lady who'd just come out of a taxi, and she was talking to him. And I wondered what she was talking to him about.
I could guess, but I'd probably get into trouble.
I really wondered what she was talking to him about, because she was earnestly like walking next to him, like walking past
to
him, like talking to him.
So listen to this. Cyril says that discussions need to be had about what's hindering the growth and progress of black businesses in South Africa. Discussions? We know what's hindering the progress and growth of black businesses. In fact, all business in South Africa, you idiot. It's you and your government. That's what's holding everything back. Get out, Move, Cyril. Get out the way. Get out the way, Cyril. Get out the way. He adds that non-payment issues by government to businesses also need to be solved. Oh, yes, that's a big problem. You know, if you do work with government, and everybody in this country who's anything has to eventually do work with government because they're the biggest player in the economy. If you are in business with them, don't expect to be paid in 3 months or even 6 months, sometimes not even 9 months. Expect to be paid a year later. Now imagine, Pums, you run a business, a small business. You don't have cash flow to survive for 12 months without income. And if government's your biggest client and they only pay you a year after they meant to pay you, you're out of business. So, you want to help black businesses?
I read a thing the other day about how Pick and Pay actually started the 180-day paying suppliers in 180 days.
It's outrageous.
Imagine that.
It's outrageous.
180 days. And it is what created an opportunity all for ShopRite and Checkers to overtake them as one of the biggest grocers and retail stores, because Checkers had a policy of paying their suppliers at 30 days.
Wow.
And what that meant is that people would rather bring their stock to Checkers because they're going to get paid. Because
correct.
Waiting 6 months, 180 days. Imagine that.
Yeah, correct. It's ridiculous. I mean, I know that also happens with lawyers. So the law firms that hire an advocate, they only pay that advocate 120 days after. It's crazy. How are you meant to make that work? You have to work 3 odd months in advance, right? Maybe 4 months in advance. It's crazy. Anyway, there's something else as well that I want to throw in quickly. South Africa's housing market is booming. But especially in Cape Town, not really everywhere else. So apparently unprecedented levels of activity in the second quarter of 2022. That's according to REMAX and the National Housing Report. The fears have been there's an economic recession. We all know about rising interest rates. Bond registrations recorded nationally were up 30% compared to the same period last year and almost 45% compared to the previous quarter. Number of sectional title units sold countrywide grew by 50%. Suburbs in and around Cape Town are the most popular, leaving no room for Gauteng, which usually features in REMAX's most searched list. So it's all happening. People are moving to Cape Town, and they're buying property there. Isn't that interesting? And they say first-time buyers, buoyed by low interest rates, drove the pandemic-era boom, which later purchases of larger and more expensive homes sustained activity towards the end of 2021. I also think this has got to do with maybe that we were in our houses more during the last 2 years. And people thought a little bit more about where they want to live and what they want to do and how they want to live. What do you think?
You know, when I saw this story, it sounded to me like a PR story, right? Like it was somebody wrote a PR.
Like the property companies are trying to convince us we should be buying property.
I don't know. I really don't know, because on the balance of it, I mean, today is Thursday and the NPC is going to come out, and I'm willing to bet. I have kind of probably 80% certainty that they're going to come out today and there's going to be an interest rate hike.
Right.
We've had interest rate hikes every time that they have met in the past. It's the third time in a row now, I think, right?
Yeah.
So that means if you took out a bond in 2020, you're paying more, your repayments now are more than what you initially had budgeted for. The numbers came out 2 days ago, I think, just inflation, which is now the highest it's been in, 15 years?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Like we're in a bad place. I cannot see, and we've got an unprecedented number of job losses.
Right.
I don't know where this is coming from. Like, people are registering bonds. Could this be bonds that are, you know, late? Maybe they didn't get registered as much as they should have been during the COVID lockdowns because everybody was working half time. I don't know. But it sounded like a PR exercise that hasn't been interrogated enough.
Well, Yonder says it's not that it's booming. Since lockdown, there has been a huge number of people who are selling. Almost each street is a big number for a sale. I just sold as well. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. I mean, that could be part of the problem, is that people are selling. And then people are picking up these properties cheap. I'm not so sure. I mean, I think you could be onto something with the fact that this might be a PR story, that you know, it comes from Remax, which is a property company. So maybe they're trying to convince people that this is a good time to buy. I don't know.
Create a bit of FOMO.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the market. So people are buying.
Yeah. So you feel like you might miss out. So you go out and you also join that craziness. So I saw, interestingly enough, talking about that heat wave in the UK earlier, I saw a bunch of people went to the union buildings to protest climate change, but it was like 20 people. It wasn't a big crowd at all. We had like this bunch of people saying, oh, we need to do something about climate change, which is always just...
They went to protest where?
At the union buildings.
At the union buildings.
But I promise you, Pumi, there were 20 of them. They were on the news the other night. And I just thought, what a waste of time. Like, what a stupid... First of all, we don't even have any power. We're not even generating power at the moment in South Africa. That's why we've got load shedding. What are you protesting about? If you took all the pollution in the world and you tried to figure out what kind of a carbon footprint South Africa has, it's nothing compared to India and China. Nothing. We could all stop using fossil fuels tomorrow. We have to sometimes anyway. Doesn't make a dent in the carbon emissions for South Africa or Southern Africa even.
Do you think they had lunch with the Khoisan that are protesting there outside the union buildings?
They all got together. Maybe that's where they recruited most
Maybe
of their
that's
support.
Why there were 20 of them.
Yeah, because there were actually only five.
Those guys are still there. They are still there. They're still camping outside the union buildings, like protesting.
I don't know why they don't move them. I mean, you just bring in, you know, bring in the red ants like you do in buildings in the CBD of Johannesburg. Just get rid of them. Like, why would the president want to go to his window every day and look down on that? But, you know, again, he's just spineless and weak. He can't even get rid of squatters on his own lawn. So what do we expect him to do for us? Honestly, it's just a show of weakness, isn't it? I mean, it's so pathetic. And I kind of feel for the Khoisan people who are there because they've been putting up this protest for a long time, but they're so ensconced now.
Since 2017,
they're so ensconced now. They like use the same tap every day. You know, it's unbelievable. So here's an interesting thing. So air consists of 78% nitrogen. I just want to. This is for the climate change people. There's 21% oxygen. There's 1% of every other kind of gas. Of that, 1% of trace gases. 0.038% is carbon dioxide. So of that 0.038%, nature produces 96% all on its own. Human influence is 4% of 0.038%. So that means that 0.00152% of human CO2 contribution is, according to these people, the cause of global warming. That does not sound right to me, and I'm not a genius at maths, but anyone could figure that that's bullshit. What do you think? Right?
It's fashionable outrage. I think it's fashionable outrage. I think South Africa has lots and lots of problems. And if we are going to protest or make a noise or bring attention to any kind of climate-based problems in South Africa, we really should worry about desertification. Is that the right word?
Yeah, correct.
That is right.
Yes, that's a problem.
Right, because we are a water-scarce country.
Correct.
We are a water-scarce country.
Right.
And all over Africa, deserts are growing. And with our, you know, with our population kind of exploding the way that it has, that's our problem, is how do we avert having a situation like Gqeberha?
Yep.
All over the country. How do we create more opportunity, and also, you know, opportunity to conserve water, use water more wisely. And that's our problem. I don't know if CO2 is our problem. No,
it's definitely not our problem. But these 20 people, they tried to put up a show at the union buildings. And then I think someone came down and received their memorandum, because, you know, that's what people do. and then they bug it off. That was the last we saw them. So at least you know. Now you know that there's someone
brings up a really cool thing in the comments, and I wanted to talk about it last week. Uh-huh. Did you see the thing about the Khoisan getting rooibos money?
No. No, tell me.
Hi, Bowena Garrett.
Tell me.
The rooibos industry, I'm not sure what that actually means, right? Mm-hmm. Is now having to pay something like 1.5% of their profits made from the industry over to the Khoisan as the owners, the knowledge owners around rooibos. Oh, yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, in mining communities, the mining community, let me look. But Roy, you don't know this about rooibos money?
No, I had no idea. This is novel. This is something I haven't heard before. They've got rooibos money. And what, they didn't invent rooibos tea. Wasn't that old Afrikaans woman back in the 70s?
The Khoi Khoi and San people were recognized as the rightful traditional knowledge holders of rooibos.
Yeah, well, they never turned it into an industry, did they?
And the rooibos industry has paid out 12 million rand to Khoi and San communities as part of an access and benefit sharing agreement signed in 2019. They got their first
good
touch.
Good for them. I think that's terrific.
But who do you think accepts that money? Whose bank account does that money go to?
Please, it's never going to reach ordinary people in those tribes. There's some middleman who's going to pocket like 90% of it. You know that. I know that. Right?
Like it was in the BBC. The article, it was like covered by the BBC and everything.
Can I just show you one quick thing before we go to the burning platform? What is...
Are you showing me Alice?
What is Fikile Mbalula wearing on his head? Looks like a dead animal. Can we just start with that before we even go to the burning platform for today? Like, what is that? What has he got on? He's talking about South Africa's rail network recovery program, but he's wearing what I suppose it's one of those Russian hats, but it looks like a dead animal of some kind. It's not good. So that's Fikile Mbalula looking ridiculous as usual. All right, when we come back, we've got a bumper episode of the Burning Platform for you this morning. We're going to be talking to Ernst Roots, who's from AfriForum. He's someone who does not hold back on his opinions. He doesn't join us if he hasn't got something to say. I'm looking forward to hearing an update from him and all the things that he's been up to in the last while, what AfriForum are doing. Also, we'll talk a little bit about international politics, which I know is one of his favorite subjects. And we can get into all the other stuff. So I'm looking forward to hearing from you in the comments, and from Ernst Roots and Pumi in the Burning Platform, which is next. Stick around. CliffCentral.com. Lots of good stuff on the way. CliffCentral.com.